Hello, welcome to another episode of our Fun Kids Science Weekly podcast. My name's Dan. This is the show where we take a quick tour of the universe and hope to uncover some of the secrets lurking about inside. Now this week, we're learning about some small things that you can do every day to help cool our climate. We'll also talk about a deadly sea slug that's bobbing around the ocean right now. We'll find out why whales are starting to finally go home to the South Pole. And I've got some more of your questions on the way today. They're all about Mars, poison, and galaxies. And speaking of galaxies, let's start there, shall we? And get another lesson from the smartest school outside of the solar system.
Deep Space High, destination Mars.
Jump into your wormhole and travel to Deep Space High. The school is space. But hurry, because lessons are about to begin.
Okay, class. Goggles on. Just let me get the Mars climatic simulator going. Just programming in Martian dust clouds.
Sir, we can't see anything with all this dust flying around.
What did you say?
We can't see anything. Turn it off.
That's it. Did you say it's hard to see what's going on?
Yes.
Well, I better turn this off.
That's better. Wow, I wouldn't like to be on Mars when there's a dust cloud. Pretty scary. Must make it impossible to use cameras. They won't see anything.
And as cameras are used to navigate rovers, they won't be going anywhere either. Dust storms are quite common on Mars because the terrain is so dry and, well, dusty. Certain times of the year are worse than others, but one thing is certain. If you go to Mars, you have to be able to cope with dust.
It made it really difficult to see. How do rovers manage when there's dust?
Well, you've spotted one of the big design challenges for the makers of the Exo rovers. They have to take into account that at times there will be some tasks that can't be done. They also need to make sure that rovers aren't damaged by the dust and can still operate safely.
Dust isn't good for delicate instruments. It can clog them up and cause damage like scratches.
Yeah, tell me about it. I dropped my tablet computer on the beach. It wasn't the same after that.
Robot designers need to ensure that anything delicate on a rover is protected from the dust, which can travel at 60 miles an hour. Can anyone think of another dusty problem? This time connected with the power.
Well, the power on the rover is from solar panels.
Which collect sunlight to convert into electricity.
Which they can't do if the solar panels are covered in a thick layer of dust.
That's right. Dust on the solar panels is a very big problem. There isn't a way to just brush the dust away. Luckily, the wind that deposits the dust on the panels will also blow most of it away.
And back on again.
Well, yes. Designers need to make the solar panels from materials which are very smooth and don't collect dust for long.
I suppose if it's dusty, then the solar panels won't be able to capture much sunlight either, even if the panels are clear.
Another design problem. Any idea how they get around that one?
I suppose they could just make the panels bigger, so they capture as much light as possible.
Exactly. Maximising the size of the solar panels is definitely part of a winning design, although the rover will have to carry them around, so they can't be too big and heavy.
Why don't they just switch off when there's a dust storm?
Well, as dust storms can last quite a long time, if you've waited for clear skies, well, you might be waiting a long time. But you're right that careful planning can help avoid the biggest problems. Look at this. The ExoMars rover is planned to operate for 218 sols. A sol is a Martian day. As the dust season can last for 296 sols, it makes sense for the mission planners to avoid this period altogether if possible.
Yeah, it would be seriously annoying if it spent its whole mission waiting for the storm to pass.
That's right. But because dust can't be 100% avoided, scientists schedule tasks and experiments to be done during dusty times which won't need to use the cameras or other delicate external equipment.
Or maybe it could have a nice nap and wait for the storm to pass.
Fortunately, rovers are rather more hard-working than you.
Deep Space High, destination Mars. Support from the UK Space Agency. Find out more at funkidslive.com science.com/space.
Let's get some of your questions answered then. Remember, if you've got something sciencey that you need the answer to, let me know what it is by leaving the Fun Kids Science Weekly a review over on Apple Podcasts, then I'll do all the work for you. This one is from Alana, who is in Stevenage. Oh yeah, Alana, she was on the show a few months ago. She was worried about starting a new school and going into year 7. It turns out that she loves it though, which is very good news. And Alana asks, what is venom made of? Well, quite a lot of different creatures have many different types of venom, Alana, so I think I'll focus on snake venom here, which is made of a combination of proteins. Proteins are the building blocks of much of the human body. Now, the proteins that the snake injects are harmful to humans. Even though it builds our body, it can also help break it down. Inside the venom as well, you've got enzymes. These are molecules which speed up chemical reactions. It means the poison gets to work quickly. It breaks down carbohydrates and proteins in your body. It also lowers the blood pressure, destroys blood cells that could help save you. It stops your muscle control. They've also got different neurotoxins in there, and these paralyze you. They disrupt the nervous signals to your brain, and they stop you breathing. These are perfectly crafted to do you a lot of damage. And what's amazing is that different snakes in different parts of the world have different venom depending on the prey that they need to attack, where they live. It's so amazing how nature has crafted this. Well, thank you so much, and I'm glad that you're having fun in year 7, Alana. Thank you very much for the question. This is from Joel, who is in Cheltenham, who's raised a point. You might remember a while ago I answered a question all about Mars and how Mars is red, and I said it's because of the iron oxide. Well, Joel had a little issue with that. He says, well, Mars has got no oxygen, Dan, so how can they have iron oxide there? Well, Joel, it's because the oxide is in the soil, not in the atmosphere. But actually, Mars does have a trace amount of oxygen in the air. The air, the atmosphere in Mars is mostly carbon dioxide. 95% of their air is carbon dioxide. You've also got nitrogen in there. You've got argon. And you've got about 0.1% oxygen in the air on Mars. So there is a little bit there, Joel. But thank you for getting in touch. And lastly, this is from Jamie and Rory, who have left a review for the show over on the Apple Podcast Store. They ask, how do you know where one galaxy ends and another begins? Now, a galaxy is a huge collection of gas and dust and stars and solar systems. And what they've got in common, what makes them a galaxy, is they're all held together by a source of gravity. That's what links it. It's all held together by one source. They're all pulled in one direction. Now, our Milky Way galaxy, it's all held together by a supermassive black hole that's right in the middle. That's what stops all the stars, the dust, the solar systems floating off. Now, a galaxy ends because the stars on the edge are so far away from the centre, they don't really feel the effects of the gravity there. And you know it ends because when the last star's done, you've got then loads of space, a huge amount of actual space before the next galaxy begins. I mean, our nearest galaxy to us is 2 million light years away. You travel that distance, then you finally start to see some more stars. And there's a huge amount of galaxies out there, Jamie and Rory. Scientists think perhaps there are 100 billion of them out there. And if there are that many galaxies, you've got to think there's probably a planet out there that could sustain life similar to our own. There's got to be some lurking out there in the universe somewhere. It's infinite after all. Listen, Jamie and Rory, thank you so much for the question. If you've got something sciencey that you want answered on this show, you need to leave it for me as a review over on the Apple Podcast Store, please. This week, our guest on the Fun Kids Science Weekly is going to try and help us save the world. Isabel Thomas is a science writer, and this book, Will Help Cool the Climate, is out now. Isabel, hello, thanks for joining us.
Hello, thanks for having me.
No, please. Now, I want to start on a little bit of a downer, if that's okay, because you say very clearly in the book that we need to be an eco-warrior, not an eco-worrier. But I'm thinking... Yeah. Before we actually fix things, everyone needs to know what there is to actually fix. And there's loads of talk about everything that's wrong, but what's the most pressing concern you feel right now that we need to fix on planet Earth?
I think it's just sort of getting to the point where we accept that we are going to have to make changes to our lifestyle. which can sound very daunting. And you just start thinking about, well, should I tackle greenhouse gases first because of global warming and climate change? Should I tackle the problems with plastic pollution? And then you sort of start to get this picture that, you know, almost every single part of your life needs some change, and you end up not knowing what to do first. But what I tried to do in the book is take the lead from children themselves and start with what they are interested in and the things that are most relevant in their day-to-day life, and show how even small changes can make a big difference, which is where we start to feel more positive and make that transfer from worrying about everything to actually feeling like, yes, we can make a difference and make a positive change in the world.
Because that's a big issue, isn't it? There are loads of stuff that we know could help the world. We need to travel less on planes. That's not really stopping many people. We know we probably need to eat less meat. Again, that's not stopping people. But in the book, you've got 50 ways, proper ways, that we, the things that we can actually do to help try and save the planet. How did you whittle them down to just 50?
This is actually the second book in the series, so we've got 100 altogether. The first book's called This Book Is Not Rubbish, and that really focused on the problems of plastic pollution and other kinds of changes we see in the environment around us. In this book, I've focused on climate change and ways that we can reduce greenhouse gases, so ways that children and their families can actually make a difference. So I didn't want to just give a sort of serious sounding lecture about things. And the book, you know, some of the tips in the book do explain the science very clearly and in a way that children and their families will then be able to take and explain to other people. So it tells you why you need to make changes, and it also tells you why these particular tips actually help. But then what I wanted to focus on is sort of a mixture of things you can do in your own home and actions you can take to sort of spread the word around other people. And I wanted to make sure that everything was fun and engaging, because I think if we just feel like every, you know, all these changes are a chore or they stop us doing things that we like to do, then we're less likely to make a habit of it and make a change. So I wanted to show how a lot of these things can be great fun. So we've got things that involve of working together, things like organising swapping parties or setting up your own climate change museum at school, or setting up schemes where you get together with a group and organise different ways to go to school. So it's things which will actually be really enjoyable to do as well. So that was really important to me in what made the cut and what got into the book.
Can you tell us a bit more about organising swapping parties that you mentioned? Is that due to cut down on this, on how suffocated we are at the moment? We've got so much stuff that we constantly want to get rid of. How would a swapping party help?
It is. It's exactly like that. So I talk about just thinking differently. In the first book, I talked a lot about clothes swapping. So we obviously all enjoy looking good, and we, you know, start to enjoy shopping and updating and being fashionable. So to say, you know, stop that altogether feels a bit daunting. But if we say, actually, we've got a lot of things lying around in our home, not just clothes, but toys, books, games, you know, kind of gadgets, almost anything really, you can get together with a group, whether that's through like a youth group or through your school or just a group of friends, and every few months just have a sort of party where you bring things together, organize a little bit of food, and you spend time just basically swapping your stuff. So you get that sort of feel good factor of having something new, but you haven't actually gone out and had to spend any money, and that has far less impact on the planet because you're just swapping things around you. Now obviously the best thing is to cut down on stuff altogether. So one of the tips in the book, which works really well for my family, which came from my own kids, is to procrastinate for the planet, which means that whenever we think, oh, I'd just love to have that, or we see an advert and we think, oh, I really want to buy that or download that game, or, you know, buy that new gadget, we always wait for a week first, and then usually you find that the feeling of just really wanting that thing kind of fades away. So it's a sort of transferring towards cutting down the amount of stuff that we buy and use, but doing that in a way that makes us feel very positive about it.
That's a fantastic idea, procrastinating for the planet, because after waiting for a week, then you suddenly start to realise actually what you do care about, what you do want, because we don't want this surface level, these surface level things that we want. We can push those aside for a week and actually realise, hang about, this is what I want after all. That's such a fantastic idea. Those are things that we need to do with other people, Isabel. Is there anything in the book, one of the tips which you can share with us now, that perhaps we can do on our own, is very achievable in a few minutes' time?
I suppose a really good one is to cut down on the amount of meat that you eat. So this is something that makes an enormous difference, and it's obviously something that a person can control themselves, how much meat is put on their plate. And, you know, I talk in the book about some very futuristic sort of ideas, like scientists investigating jellyfish crisps, for example, which is a different type of animal protein, very sort of nutritious. Sounds a bit futuristic, as do sort of, you know, insect-based protein. It's going to be a big part of our future, but perhaps not for right now. But in the meantime, we can make a huge difference just by replacing a little bit of the meat in our meals with other foods. And it's far better, you know, if half of us manage to cut down on meat a little bit, it's going to have a far bigger impact than, say, 5% of us going entirely vegan. So it's really about sort of thinking, yes, every little I can do helps. So, for example, you could just choose one day a week to give up meat and dairy, or you could try replacing some of the meat in every meal with different forms of protein. So things like beans, you know, chickpeas, sort of vegetable-based protein, and you can make a huge difference that way. You know, if you sort of think that every, say, you went out with your family and had four burgers in a meal, that's equivalent to driving more than 100 kilometres in a car. So you can see, just from one meal, you can start making a massive difference to the amount of greenhouse gas emissions.
That's another fantastic idea, because so many people are put off and are worried and are almost a bit offended by the current wave of veganism. But what you say about if half of us were just to cut down maybe a day or so a week, that's much better than 5% of people cutting out altogether. Now, listen, lastly, I just want to ask you about the actual design of the book, because I've read, you know, a fair amount of books that want to tell us how we can save the planet. But they're quite often a little bit dry, a little bit boring, whereas yours is utterly spectacular. Can you tell us about how you worked with the illustrator and all the different, like the myth boxes that you've got in here as well, all these little quirks that bring the story to life?
Yeah, we just wanted to, you know, all the words are quite, you know, nicely spread out, and they're fantastic cartoons by Alex Patterson. And basically, I try to write, you know, I like writing funny books anyway, and just because it's a serious subject, it doesn't mean that you have to suddenly go very serious in tone. Actually, I think it's the serious subjects where we really need that humour to grab people's attention and make them want to keep reading. So I put a lot of jokes into my writing, and hopefully that makes it very readable. And then Alex takes those jokes and comes up with these fantastic cartoons, these brilliantly expressive animal cartoons, and just things that I think remind us more of the sort of magazines and things we're seeing all around us, rather than feeling like we're looking at any kind of, you know, serious textbook. So hopefully it's a really good fun read as well.
I think it absolutely has come across. Listen, if you want to be an eco-warrior, not an eco-warrior, if you want to start and make a head start on actually trying to save the planet, then pick it up. This book will help cool the climate. Isabel, thank you so much for telling us more.
Thank you.
Now, before we dive into the ocean and crack on with this week's Dangerous Dan, I want to give you a quick heads up about another podcast that we've just released here at Fun Kids. It's brand new, and if you love this one, you'll absolutely love that one. It's called The Space Programme. It's a podcast drama series. I think there are going to be about 20 episodes. And it's all about a competition to send the first kid ever into space. So this space agency, they're not going for a tried and trusted trained astronaut. No grown-up, no nothing dull like that. No, instead they're going to send someone like you into space. They will be in charge of exploring the universe on behalf of humanity. So if you love your space, if you love exploring the universe with us, I think you really need to get involved with The Space Programme. It's a fantastic brand new podcast drama series that we've made, and you can have a listen to it wherever you got this show from. So just open up your podcast feed, search for The Space Programme, and it should be there. You can also get it on the free Fun Kids app, and you can have a listen at funkidslive.com. Right, it's time for this week's Dangerous Dan, which is all about the mesmerising Blue Angel Sea Slug. If you can, get online, pull up a picture of the Blue Angel Sea Slug right now. I'm going to describe it to you, but it's so mesmerising, so hypnotically beautiful, I don't think I can quite do it justice. It floats around the seas, this sea slug, hovering. It gets dragged around by tides. That's how it moves from place to place. And it looks almost like the perfect impression of an angel, with wide kind of tentacles that fan out in three rows. The tentacles are all light blue. They've got a darker blue tip. Although it looks like an angel, I can't describe it, but it kind of brings to mind a dragon too. Have a look and you understand why. It's weird, it hypnotises you. It's found floating around the coasts by South Africa and Australia, and it's carnivorous, which means it feeds on other venomous sea creatures. And it's quite the assassin too. It takes out some pretty deadly beasts. It's known to prey on the brutal Portuguese man of war. That's an outrageously deadly creature. Well, this one, the Blue Angel Sea Slug, takes that one down. And how's this? This is a very cruel thing that it does now. When it eats venomous creatures, it steals their poison. It keeps the toxic venom that it steals in a special sack and then uses that on future prey. It's cunning. It's like this never-ending wheel of death and destruction. It kills creatures, steals their venom, and then uses that venom to kill some more. Now, it's not that deadly to us humans, but if you do go near one, it can unleash a pretty brutal, painful sting if you do bump into it in the ocean. But the fact that it's such a cruel, cunning, carnivorous beast, I think it's got to go on our Dangerous Dan list, right? It's the Blue Angel Sea Slug. Right, let's get some of your gadget questions answered now with our geeky guru. This is Techno Mum.
Techno Mum's Tech Trivia with the Institution of Engineering Technology. Welcome back to Tech Trivia, the game show that tests the technical talents of our tremendous contestants. And playing this week, it's Techno Mum.
Hi.
Now you've been smashing our scoreboard so far, but the game's not over yet. Let's get going and spin the wheel. And today's category is recycling. Your time starts now. Your first question. Why is recycling important in technology?
Well, recycling is important for everyone. There's only a certain amount of resources on our planet, and with many of them, once they're gone, they're gone. Now, most designers want their things they make to be available not just today, but tomorrow, next week, and even next year. That's called being sustainable. But if you want your stuff to be sustainable, you need to think carefully as you design your new product and before choosing the raw materials. Sometimes reusing something can be cheaper than using something new. You've probably got a refillable water bottle for school. That's certainly cheaper than buying a new bottle every day. Well, these days, designers will design what they make so parts can easily be reused. Did you know that around 90% of a modern car can be recycled? Metals can be used to build a new car, whilst old tyres can go into road surfacing. And if you think about it, design is not just about reusing materials. Part of what engineers do every day is recycle ideas, reusing the very best ideas, improving them to come up with brilliant new solutions to problems.
Well, you're improving your score, right? Next question. Name a cool way recycling has solved an engineering problem.
Oh gosh, there's loads. Well, a bit like glass bottles, plastic bottles can also be recycled and made into clothing. The plastic is shredded, melted and spun into polyester. That's a type of thread. And milk cartons can be recycled as well, into other plastic things like fence posts. In fact, new plastic can be made from all sorts of substances. There's even a type of plastic which is made from pig wee.
Ah, gross. But hey, that is pretty cool. Last question, and you're going to have to be quick. Can you give me a job where you'd need to use recycling?
I'm going to say aerospace engineering. That's like being a rocket scientist. In some places, recycling is the only way to get things done. for example, space. If you were travelling to Mars, you can't get supplies along the way. But supplies are heavy and they can slow you down. So the more you can recycle, the further you can go. Aerospace engineers are expert at figuring out ways to reuse things that are likely to run out, like water to drink and oxygen to breathe.
I have to stop you there. The results are through, and you're through to the next round, Techno Mum.
Great! That means you won't need to get a new contestant in. Recycling in action.
Techno Mum's Tech Trivia with the Institution of Engineering Technology. Find out more at funkidslive.com/tech trivia.
Right, let's take a look at the science that's been in your news this week. Scientists say they've spotted a remarkable collection of blue whales around Antarctica. They counted 55 different ones across a 23-day survey, which is a number that's hugely higher than expected. Now, the island nearby in the Antarctic, South Georgia, was once the home of whaling in the early 20th century. And the number of species was massively reduced when that was going on to just a few hundred. So to see so many coming back home, really, is truly amazing. Also, ships could be powered by fertilizer within 10 years. They say that they'll use ammonia, which is a chemical in fertilizer, to burn in the engines instead of polluting diesel. And they hope that this will help with climate change. Goes along with our guest earlier on in the show. And finally, NASA have started looking for new astronauts to head to the moon by 2024. The only catch, you need to be a US citizen. I know there are quite a lot of people that listen to this in America, so fantastic. If this is you, get involved. But I live in the UK right now, and I'm not going to be a US citizen anytime soon. I don't think they'll have me in. So, yeah, good for you. You need a science background. You need a minimum of 1,000 hours as a pilot on a jet aircraft. That knocks me back again. You have to do an online application and then a physical exam. If you go through all that, there is a small chance that you may be selected to go to the moon. And that is it for this week's Fun Kids Science Weekly. Thank you so much for having a listen. If you've enjoyed any of the series that you've heard so far on the show, you can always find them over on the Apple Podcast Store. While you're there, make sure you listen and subscribe to our brand new series, The Space Programme. I think you'll really love it. Also, that's the best place where you can leave a question if you want it answered in the next few weeks on the podcast. Just find the Fun Kids Science Weekly on there and leave your question for us as a review. You can also find all the fantastic series on the free Fun Kids app and at funkidslive.com. And Fun Kids, we're a children's radio station in the UK. You can listen to us all over the country on your DAB digital radio on that free Fun Kids app. And as always, at funkidslive.com.